There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
And that's how we get started on this Friday edition of Midday Mobile, live local talk over the next couple of hours. Glad to have you along. And yes, it's the countdown to Christmas. Weekend looks pretty tough. We'll get more from Dr. Bill coming up in just a little bit. But I want to point out what Dalton said earlier. Let's take this gray cloud and make a silver lining. People of weak constitution will not get out and shop tomorrow. Those of us that may have procrastinated or tactfully delayed our Christmas shopping, we'll have the ability to get in the stores without all those people in our way. That's a positive spin. It's a rainy weekend ahead, but we'll get more from Dr. Bill coming up at around 12:35. And lots to do on today's show, and we start off with a man that I was just talking to when he was in Washington on the telephone. Now he's sitting here in the studio. AL1's Congressman Bradley Byrne joining us now. Good afternoon.
Sean, good to be in the studio.
Glad to be somewhere
other than Washington, D.C. as well.
I was thinking about this. You and I mentioned this on the phone the other day. I was up in Washington in September. You and I were sitting there talking in Washington when this first broke, this move for impeachment here. And I got to tell you, I didn't know the timeline. You had a better sense of that because you were talking about right around Christmas. But, you know, I came back here and I said, the Democrats control the House. They're going to impeach the president. Yeah. All the people say, well, maybe it won't happen. I said, come on, this is going to happen.
Well, maybe it hasn't happened.
Well, that's what you said. That's what I'm getting to. I'm setting you up because now you walk in here. You and I have been talking for about 10, 15 minutes in here before the show started. And you said, well, the president hadn't actually been impeached yet. And I said, okay. I say, what, Congressman?
So Noah Feldman, who was one of the law professors that the Democrats brought in to talk to the Judiciary Committee, wrote an article in Bloomberg this morning where he says, impeachment doesn't occur until the articles of impeachment are presented to the Senate. So from Noah Feldman's point of view, while there was a vote in the House, the president has not been, in legal technical terms, impeached yet.
This, you know, I feel like we're in a continuing civics, continuing education for civics, right? In this, I'm learning things all the time that I didn't know. I mean, I didn't know about managers and handing over to the Senate. Monday, I looked at a story, I think it was out of the Federalist, talking about, well, these articles could be held up and they don't immediately go to the Senate. And I said, well, I've missed that in civics class. I didn't know. And that's
never happened before.
It has not. In the past impeachments in this country, this process has gone straight from articles to moving to the Senate.
Absolutely, because the idea is that the Senate has to actually conduct a trial.
Right.
We don't conduct a trial in the House. It's just a vote on impeachment articles.
Right.
The trial actually occurs in the Senate.
Y'all are like the grand jury?
They've kind of overblown the grand jury thing, because grand juries actually do more than we've done in the House. But, I mean, essentially we're saying, here are charges that are being brought against the president.
Okay.
Now, the charges have to be tried. The trial is in the Senate. The Senate is like a jury. The Supreme Court Chief Justice presides, et cetera, et cetera. But what's happened is that typically in the past, there's a pretty easy agreement reached between the Republicans and the Democrats about the process. Did it with Nixon, did it with Clinton. Schumer's come in and said, I want to call these extraneous witnesses, da-da-da-da-da. And McConnell said no. And so Pelosi said, well, if you don't do the impeachment trial, or don't commit to doing it the way we want you to, then we'll show you. We just won't send you the articles of impeachment. To which McConnell says, I don't want the articles anyway, so don't send them over here. I'll just keep confirming conservative judges.
I mean,
she's got no leverage with the man. I don't know why she thinks she does.
I mean, the Senate didn't come into y'all's house and tell you how to run that it didn't come in, Mitch McConnell didn't come into the Democrats and say, here's how you run the articles of impeachment, the investigation.
And we sure didn't prove ourselves to be able to do a very fair process either.
Right, right.
We broke every norm in the investigation and how we handled this in the House. And now they're going to try to tell the Senate what's the right way to do it?
So,
I mean, this is crazy.
So this begs or brings up several questions in my mind. So with it in this limbo zone, and I'm going to try to relate it to regular things, those of us, you know, that don't deal with federal politics understand, but it would be like being charged. I got charged with jaywalking, whatever it is. I got charged with something, but there's not going to be a trial. I mean, that's kind of where it sits right now, yeah. Right? Sean, you're charged with jaywalking, but we're probably not going to hand these over. You're not going to have a day in court. To me, that, I don't know if it's a Sixth Amendment or a due process violation, but there's something sticking in my craw here.
Well, it certainly looks like somebody's abusing legal process if they do it that way. Now, lots of questions about whether or not an impeachment is a, quote, legal process.
Right, that's a great, I don't
know
that.
So I don't, you know, once again, we're kind of in uncharted waters. But let me just kind of look at it from a political point of view.
Okay.
Nancy Pelosi said 3 or 4 weeks ago, we have to get this done by Christmas. It cannot wait until after Christmas,
right.
Okay? And so we're going to slam, bam this thing through the
For
House.
For the good of the country, we need to move this along.
We've got
to
get it done, okay? Mm-hmm. So we got it done. Wednesday, we had a purely partisan vote. That's mm-hmm. never happened before either. And so the lady that had to have everything done before Christmas says, well, I'm just not going to send the articles over there until after Christmas. And she can't send them over there to January the 7th because the Senate's not in. So what in the heck is she doing? It undermines her case mm-hmm. with the American people. I just don't think she understands how much she's undermined her own case.
Now, this process is the way we've been talking about this week. There are managers that are, does the speaker nominate them, or is there an election? How do we, the managers, and then they carry the documents over or something?
Yeah, the way it works is we passed a rule before we voted on the impeachment Wednesday, and the rule empowers her to appoint the managers. The managers literally bring the case. They're the prosecutors over in the Senate.
Okay.
But the managers don't have to physically deliver them, themselves, physically deliver the articles. The articles can be delivered by a clerk.
Okay.
So it's a ministerial act. I mean, you walk across the Capitol.
Right.
You know, it's the second floor of the Capitol. You walk that long hallway, and at the other end of the building is the Senate. And you walk in the room. There's a little ceremony that they do. They walk in there, and they bow and all this stuff.
Right, right.
And they present something that the House has passed to the Senate. Happens all the time.
Right.
Legislation, et cetera. And so that's all she had to do.
And it hasn't been done.
No, because she's got leverage over Mitch McConnell to get the process in the Senate the way she wants it to. She's worried if there's a fair process in the Senate, it ain't going to look good for her case.
It's interesting, I mean, because if she is savvy. I mean, Nancy Pelosi is savvy, but maybe I'm missing something, because where does that leverage come from?
I don't think she's as savvy as a lot of people make her out to be.
Really? Okay.
Now, she's savvy with her own group.
Yeah.
I mean, she's got, you know, pretty good control over her own group. But I don't think she's that savvy otherwise. I've been watching her for, you know, real up close now for 6 years, and I'm thoroughly unimpressed.
So she may truly be in a delusional state that she can compel Mitch McConnell to do something just because?
I think so. I think she has convinced herself against all logic that somehow her withholding the articles of impeachment are going to put some pressure on Mitch McConnell.
He's going to capitulate and do it the way she or Schumer want it.
Yeah. Whether you like Mitch McConnell or not, the man's got true ice water in his veins.
Right.
I mean, he held back that nominee for the Supreme Court that Obama had, deep sixed it, mm-hmm. and then it shoved two more people, Republicans, in behind him. And they, you know, they scream bloody murder about that. You know what he cares? Not one little bit. And he couldn't care less what Nancy Pelosi thinks or says about him.
Well, and I think that there's been enough attention to this that it would be tough for Speaker Pelosi or others to frame that as, hey, they're not doing the work of the people because of where we are. The bar has already been set so low.
Yeah.
Coming out of this process in the House. You know, if the bar was set high and it had been all above board coming out of the House, then you might say, and, you know, be trying to be a fair guy, I might say, listen, the House did the process fairly. the Senate, y'all can't be partisan, but the bar's laying on the ground.
Well, what they did in 1999 with Bill Clinton, or 1998 is when they started it, is the House Democrats and the House Republicans reached agreement about how it was going to be handled in the House, and the Senate Democrats, the Senate Republicans, reached a deal how it was going to be handled over there, and they basically just copied what happened with Nixon, okay? Plus, you didn't do that
at
all.
You mean Democrats met with Republicans, Republicans met with Democrats, yeah, and came to an agreement?
Yeah, about how you do the process.
I remember this, way back when, okay?
And this process, she just said, no, we're going to do it this way. We're going to cram it down your throat. You're not going to be able to call any witnesses. President, you can't come and defend yourself.
That sounds like somebody that doesn't want it to be taken up in the Senate.
Well, I mean, maybe she doesn't. Maybe she just wanted to have that little showcase the other day. But I'm going to tell you something. I didn't feel despondent or anything Wednesday. I went in there, just, you know, a little grim. But let me tell you, the Democrats looked very grim. I'm just telling you, those freshman Democrats that are running in Trump districts, they looked awful because they knew this was a bad vote politically. And as a result of all of it, we now have a new Republican in the House, Jeff Van Drew.
Yeah, so changed his parties and said in his comments the other day, he talked about the articles of impeachment, also talked about different things that were I guess, one of these the Democrat Party left him kind of things.
Yeah. I've traveled with Jeff. He went with me to El Paso when we did that trip to the border you and I've talked about. I didn't know him before, but since then I've gotten to know him a little better. I like Jeff very much. He's a man of principle, and his principle told him he just couldn't support this. And you can't do that and be in the Democratic Party. So he switched. Now, he's going to have a tough race, but we're going to get in there and help him all we can, and the president's going to help him. And you watch. He'll win.
Who's running the Democrats in the House? I mean, you know, obviously,
Pelosi does in a tactical sense, but the thought leaders of the Democratic Party are the squad. It's AOC and
is
all
that
them.
That's true?
Yeah,
because I mean, to me, that seems like rhetoric. That seems like this those freshmen that are on the farthest left of the far left are running the show in amongst, you know, Democrats have been there for a long time, like Nancy Pelosi.
Well, I'm not saying Nancy and them like it, and I think they don't like it, but they're the media darlings, number one. Number two, look at their Twitter followership.
Mm-hmm.
So they can move opinion against you in your own district in a Democratic primary. So they scare people. But they didn't get all they wanted this week because they didn't like that Mexico-Canada trade agreement, and they voted against it. I was watching the squad.
They voted against the USMCA, right?
Yes.
Even though there are a lot of Democrats that try to get in front of cameras to attach themselves to that signature legislation for President Trump.
Right. So we impeached him on Wednesday, then we passed by 380-some-odd votes his signature trade agreement on Thursday. But it didn't go far enough in giving, I don't know what they were, all I know it was a bunch of environmental stuff they wanted in there, and they didn't put it in there, so AOC and all of them said, we're not voting for it.
There we go. Coming right back, more of our conversation with our Congressman Bradley Byrne, candidate for U.S. Senate. He's, I was going to say fresh back from Washington, but maybe not fresh.
He's
just back from Washington. We'll be right back.
Santa Claus is coming to town. He's making a...
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 1222 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Friday. Good to have AL1's Congressman Bradley Byrne, candidate for Senate, in the studio, just back from Washington, and talking a little bit about this, for me, what has been a continuing education on civics with an impeachment process, because now we're looking at something that I thought, dummy me, that, you know, after these articles of impeachment would be voted, they'd go on over to the Senate, and now they're put on ice.
Yeah, they're sitting in the Speaker's office, I guess. I'm not exactly sure where they are, but... that it's not an official impeachment, according to Noah Feldman, until it's actually delivered to the Senate. So President Trump has not been impeached yet.
So there's a headline. Can we Google that and see if anybody's run that headline?
I don't think I've seen that headline.
Yeah, I hadn't either, but that's the truth then, if he has not been impeached.
Well, he's one of the experts the Democrats picked and brought before the Judiciary Committee. He's one of their experts, so I'm going by what their expert says.
All right, let's look at, I want to discuss this from both sides because, you know, your president in the House have been going through this from raiding the shift to speaking on the floor to all that to now running for Senate. and kind of look at it through those eyes. If you were already in the Senate, what would you be preparing for? How would you be looking at this coming to you in the Senate?
Well, you're actually like a real juror in the Senate, so you got to prepare yourself to receive, you know, testimony, documents, evidence. But the truth of the matter is we already know what it all is. There's nothing new under the sun.
Right.
So for anybody to pretend that they're, quote, objective, close quote, at this point, or open-minded, that's stupid. I mean, everybody knows what's going on here. So if I were in the Senate, I would say, bring it on. I'll sit through all this. But, you know, it's got to be something pretty dramatic to get me to change my mind about this, because there's no there. There's no allegation in either article about a crime.
Okay.
Okay? So if I'm a juror, aren't you supposed to show me a crime?
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I think, because, you know, high crimes or misdemeanors, you know, it's not normal speak for people. They don't know what that may entail, and then they hear obstruction of Congress. And, you know, I pointed out that in the last two impeachment proceedings, it was obstruction of justice.
Correct.
That was called out. But this, I think they're hoping people mistake obstruction of Congress for obstruction of justice.
I think they did want that. Obstruction of justice is actually, it's a sort of a phrase that covers a number of different specific crimes. And so, I mean, you know, like Richard Nixon.
Breaking into offices.
And willfully withholding evidence, yeah, et cetera, when you get a lawful subpoena, et cetera. I mean, Nixon was clearly guilty. There's no question about it.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Clinton was clearly guilty of perjury, okay? Mm-hmm. No question about it. That is a crime. But the Senate said, okay, it is a crime, but it's not high enough. It's got to be a high crime, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So here we are. We don't even have a crime of any type here. And so they call it, you know, abuse of power.
Mm-hmm.
No, there's nothing in the Constitution about abuse of power. And obstruction of Congress, okay? Presidents tell Congress no all the time when it comes to documents and witnesses, starting with George Washington. George Washington refused to send stuff over to the Congress. So this executive privilege is not some new thing. The way you play this out is that if Congress doesn't like the president saying no, they go to court. And the court says, yes, Congress, you were entitled to this. President, you have to turn it over to them. But they didn't want to take the time to do that because they had to have it done by Christmas.
Here's one of the things that, and in the debate, I know where I'm ignorant, and I'm trying to figure out what the rule is, because I had, we both know the man very well. Robert Kennedy Jr. is on with me on Thursdays.
Yeah.
He was in here yesterday debating this with me. And Robert and I are friends, and he said to me, he said, well, the fact is, in any other situation, you might be right that you would have to bring the judicial branch in. I said, you know, what about co-equal branches of government? He said, yeah, but in the impeachment proceedings, that supersedes that you can call for that information. I don't know that is true or false.
No, it's pretty common. We did it with Obama, that the House would actually go to court and get a court to order the documents to be produced. That's not unusual.
You kind of brought something up. You had an amendment that brought that up the other day.
Yeah. Yeah, what I was doing, I'm talking about Fast and Furious. We all remember that, the gun scheme,
mm-hmm,
where one of the guns actually came back across the border and was used to kill a law enforcement agent. And we spent months, years, trying to get Obama and Eric Holder as Attorney General to turn over documents. They stonewalled us, and we held them in contempt of Congress. It's not an impeachment, but we held them in contempt of Congress. There's something else we can do. All the Democrats that voted for those articles of impeachment yesterday, the day before yesterday, who were in the House 5 years ago, voted against holding Eric Holder in contempt of Congress for exactly the same thing that Donald Trump is doing.
And somehow they didn't let your amendment in?
They would not make it in order. They would not make it in order.
Point that out, that the Democrats did not let that in.
I was surprised.
I was shocked.
I remonstrated with the chairman of the Rules Committee, and he just was not sympathetic.
Okay, so let's we're looking at this. Goes to the Senate. And I wonder about this. This is some of the just intangibles. But to me, the more attention the Democrats have spent on this process that we knew from the get-go, when I also knew back in September that this day would come, what happened on Wednesday, I also knew the Senate would not vote to remove. That tells me if all that political capital and energy was put in by the Democrats, because, and knowing that it wouldn't remove President Trump from the White House, to me this says their internals, everything shows that they're in real trouble in 2020. That this is all about 2020 in the presidential.
Well, they said as much.
You know,
if we don't impeach him, he's going to get reelected.
Right. They've had a member say
so,
that.
So, you know, I think they're really worried about next year.
I mean, I think if you had a Democrat that was, you know, in the polls blowing it out of the water against President Trump, he had no chance of winning, that what has just happened over the last 3 months would have had a different, if it existed at all, would have had a different take.
I wonder if we'd even have it.
That's what I'm saying. If they had internals that showed it's Biden, it's Warren, it's whomever, is going to win handily in every metric we see, he's going to blow Trump out of the water, would this have even happened?
Well, we know President Trump's going to win Alabama and states like Alabama.
Yeah, I'm talking about
this poll that came out, it's about a month ago now, that showed that he's beating all of the leading contenders, Democratic contenders,
yep,
in Wisconsin.
Yep. That's what I'm saying. That must ring in their
ears. Minnesota's in play. So you stop and think about it. Good golly, Miss Molly, they're in deep trouble. If they can't hold Minnesota, if they lose Wisconsin again,
yep,
they're done. And they get four more years of Donald Trump, which if we thought that their heads exploded after the election in 2016, it's going to be a nuclear explosion next year.
Oh, well, we'll see. You said January 7th is the first day that this could go to the Senate.
That the articles could be presented to the Senate.
This thing that had to be done so quickly.
Yes.
Okay. Also, speaking of the Senate, your campaign now for the Senate, you're going to be home for a little while here. You're going to be visiting. I know you've got Christmas with the family. You got a turducken to cook.
I do have a turducken coming Wednesday, but that's Wednesday. No, we're still campaigning, and we'll campaign up until probably the end of the day, Monday.
Okay.
And then we get back at it after Christmas. Without this impeachment thing hanging over our heads, we'll be spending a lot more time in the state of Alabama during January, February. So we'll be actively campaigning all over the state. Not quite as much down here, but mainly in North Alabama.
It's because whichever poll you want to pick, your name recognition through the roof down here. So.
Yeah, but not so much Birmingham and Huntsville.
Go see them in the Shoals, right?
Yep.
Thank you for your time.
Merry Christmas.
Hey, Merry Christmas to you. Our Congressman Bradley Byrne joining us, candidate for U.S. Senate, right here on Midday Mobile, and we're coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Call 35 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Friday, and it's great, man. It's like people coming to hang out here in studio. People I often talk to on the telephone. AL1's Congressman Bradley Byrne, also Mobile County Commissioner and candidate for the Republican primary for AL1. Jerry Carl in studio now. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you.
You got your shopping done?
No.
Okay, good. Good.
That's
I feel better.
That's what the 24th is for.
That's right. That's right. That's what I was looking at. This is the weekend. You know, if you are a single lady looking for single men out there, you know, I was talking about places to go to find. Stores over the next 4 days is probably where the guys will be, because this is when guy shopping season starts.
Oh, yeah, sure.
You know, the ladies have had this done. Heck, Black Friday, they had it done before Thanksgiving. But
the professional shoppers go on the 24th.
Yeah.
Because we know exactly where we're going, exactly what we're going to buy.
Oh, yeah, there's no browsing.
And we spend twice as much as a normal person.
Yes,
does,
we do.
Too.
They love seeing us coming.
I throw some names out there, but I've got a friend of mine at a jewelry store. He just grins every time I walk through the door because he knows he's going to clip me.
Right, but they're not. It's not that this guy is going to come in here and look through some stuff and then come back some other day. They're going to buy something. I just got to figure out what I'm going to sell them.
Oh, he's been holding something back. When I walk in there, he'll go, "I've been holding this just for you." So.
Nice move. Well done. And you've got to do this in amongst a very busy campaigning schedule as well.
It has been, but it's been a great race. I have enjoyed this race more than I have enjoyed any race. I thought my first race would be my best, but this has absolutely been just a wonderful, wonderful race. Somebody asked me the other day what the biggest surprise was, and I said how easy it has been. I have a lot of people helping me on this campaign, a lot of it staff, a lot of it is volunteer, and I'm just not used to that. So I can just be a candidate, and I can just focus on issues, and I can touch the people, and that's what I love doing, is talking to people, and because that's where you learn. You learn from the people that you're trying to, you know, sell your ideas to. They're expressing their ideas, and you grow from that.
Let's talk about some of the ideas. And there's some main planks of your platform. I want to talk about that. But, you know, I like to get into, like, detail here. I was thinking about you, too. We're talking about this grant money coming in to the U.S. Corps of Engineers that will be part of hopefully deepening and widening the ship channel.
Dredging project.
Something we've talked about several times. But I think there's a little bit of a lesson. The lesson I first learned when I was asking a million why questions over where the federal funding was for the I-10 Mobile River Bridge project, and I said, well, why can't Senator Shelby just put the money in there? And I learned, well, now, you know, for the last whatever it is, dozen years, 15 years, you can't specifically earmark. It has to go to an agency in the state or another agency before it gets to the actual project. Same thing here. This money that was announced, it's a big chunk of money, $651 million, I think, goes to U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. But then we know by default, it said, I think at the language, I'm paraphrasing, but it was for infrastructure and competitiveness for exports or something. I mean, everything in the language told me, okay, they're going to use this for the port and for the ship channel.
And that's the word we started receiving.
That's the official word. Okay.
Right. Yeah. I actually sit on the board at the State Port Authority.
Right.
So we started receiving messages yesterday that they thought Shelby had managed to pull the rabbit out of the hat, which should be of no surprise to any of us.
Right.
But we do have a check and balance system when it comes to government, believe it or not. We don't just write checks and give it to local governments and
right, you can't do that. Now, there's a check in between.
Yes, there has to be. And that's what county government is actually set up for. So much of county government, we're the auditing branch, for lack of better terms, for some of the local cities, especially the smaller cities. We have a huge project going down in Ballabatry. The city of Ballabatry never could handle this size project. So we will actually manage that project for them and proud to do it. I mean, that's part of our job.
Mm-hmm.
But the government wouldn't write a check. We will be answerable for that money, for that project.
So it's on y'all.
Sure it is. It is. But we have staff that's used to dealing with that. So it's just, you know, another day at the shop for us.
I want to talk about what that looks like, too. I mean, I know nothing's concrete yet, but you have pretty good insight into this. What kind of timeline are we looking at for the expansion and the deepening and widening of the ship channel and the turnaround and all that?
They're hoping 4 years. That's their goal. I know we're putting some projects together, and we're looking at some projects that will actually are 5 years away that will require that, to give you some idea. So there's Jimmy Lyons, who's leaving the Port Authority.
Yeah, I saw that retiring end of next year.
You're talking about a well of knowledge. That man, he knows where all the bodies are buried, and he understands the politics.
Right.
And whoever replaces him, I feel sorry for that person. But, Jimmy's working 10, 15 years ahead of this project. And his staff, I should say, not just him, but his entire staff. So we've got some big things coming to Mobile, huge things coming to Mobile. Mobile is we're on the tip of this arrow. I'm telling you, it is huge. We have so many times got in our way, but right now we seem to continue to stay out front.
Well, and these are some of the infrastructure issues. You know, we talk infrastructure, but this is directly correlated with business. I mean, as much as I, you know, I'm a homer, and I think people and businesses come here because we're great, and that's part of it. We're good, hard workers, but, you know, interstates, deep water ports, you know, big airports, you know, those kind of things are key.
Well, you know, when we've been to Washington several times lobbying for more money for the bridge, and most everyone in Washington will tell you there are traffic issues across the nation. What makes ours any special than anyone else's? But the port does create with us bringing in the container terminal. I mean, looking at Walmart, you know, somewhere between 300 to 600 containers, depending on the time of the year, a day. Obviously, not all of them going east.
Right.
But you're talking about a lot more truck traffic. That equates into jobs. That equates into tax dollars that are generated. But, you know, we tried our best to get them to understand in Washington that, and they really don't. They really don't get it. So that's why, from a local government standpoint, we have been working on Plan B.
Okay.
On the bridge.
Plan B.
And we're not ready to talk about it.
Oh, come
yet.
You can't come in here.
I always do that.
You can't come in here and say there's a Plan B.
The bridge project, as far as the local elected officials, has never died. You know, the governor got angry with us, and she said the project was dead. And trust me, she does have the ultimate word. But that doesn't give us any reason to quit. And we won't quit. We have continued working on it. We will continue working on it.
All right, come back. More of our conversation with candidate for AL1 for the Republican side and Mobile County Commissioner Jerry Carl. Take your calls and text as well at 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:47 FM Talk 106.5. Midday Mobile on this Friday. Glad to have you here and good to have in studio candidate for AL1 for the Republicans and Mobile County Commissioner Jerry Carl, who stopped on in the studio. So it's even though most people are shopping, You're still not, you're days away from your shopping.
That's true. Again, you know, the 24th is when the real professionals break out and go shopping.
I would go to the phones and grab some questions here, too, at 343-0106. Jack in Mobile, you're on with Jerry Carl.
Oh, glad to be here, and want to wish all y'all Merry Christmas and wish your family well. I love you, including Jerry.
Merry Christmas, Jack. Merry Christmas.
I got a simple question. I'd like to know where most of y'all are raising your money from. I'm just curious. I know when I ran, I had like 500 people give me money. $50, $20. I'm just curious to know.
The difference in this race, especially comparing it to my county commission race, is we're limited how much we can actually take. We can take $2,800 per cycle. Per person, there can't be any corporate money. So most of mine has either been personal money. I think we're roughly about 99% within the district, money from within our district. Some of the other candidates, a lot of their money's coming out of Washington, and some of it's coming out of Montgomery. So I call it the swamp money, but money's money. I'll be the first one to tell you that, because these races are terribly expensive, and you know, to raise $1 million sounds simple, but it's not. Not at $2,800.
No, it's not. Well, let me ask you another one.
Okay.
You know, I used to look at everybody that ran and where they got their money from. Not only that, look at what their net worth or their salaries are, or what they made that year. You know, I hadn't looked at them, but I think some of their salaries is questionable. I was just curious to know, did they have to print the truth, or somebody has to look and find out where that money's coming from? Is that a question you can answer?
Well, I can tell you what we did. My wife and I, we had to file through the Federal Election Committee, and we had to claim all of our stocks, all of our interests, everything. We claimed everything. I mean, we had a CPA to go through our documentation, and there was nothing left out, I'll assure you. So I can speak for myself. Since then, I know at least one candidate questioned another candidate's filings, and we were told that was really not a big deal. So I guess you can claim what you want to claim. No one's really there. It's like so many laws we have on the books. There's just nothing there to enforce it.
That's I'm curious to know. That's unusual. It looks like if a candidate should be able to be truthful with his salary, what he makes. And I'm not talking about any particular candidate. I'm just saying, I know some of the races in the past, especially the ones I've been through, you look at some of the salaries and you go, that don't look right. But anyway, that's just me.
Hey, Jack, Merry Christmas. Appreciate the call.
Oh, no problem. Thank you.
All right. One of the things, this is kind of a side rant, and this is really more about me just getting this off my chest. I don't know what the right solution is, but, you know, we have limits for individual donations, but we don't have limits to donations to the parties.
That's true.
And that, you know, we hear stuff like, I just went through this talking to Congressman Byrne about pressure that would be applied one way or another to those Democrats that might have wanted to vote against the articles of impeachment because it meant better in their district. But the money comes in for the party, and people can give unlimited money, you know, to the party, and then the party gets... I would rather see the individual candidates, because I'm somebody who is focused on individual human beings versus party, right? And somebody could do... And it puts a situation where... Yeah, and I understand the reasoning, but, you know, you limit the contributions to the individual candidate, but here the party can bring money to a candidate, and they can pick favorites. And so that takes away the me as a citizen, finding the horse I want to have win the race and run with, that gets go-around here, because the party gets to decide who they pick and who they put the money into.
And I think that's a wonderful opportunity to say, support your local candidates. I mean, you've got someone that, you know, $25, $50 donations go a long way. Mm-hmm. Obviously, $2,800 are accepted also.
Yes.
Any candidate, statewide, there's no limits. You can take it from corporations. I mean, there are some... obviously some guidelines there, but you know, Ken Buck wrote a book, who's a congressman from Colorado, and he explains how once he got elected and he got in there, he was told he had to raise $200,000 to be on a particular committee. So to raise that, he raised it, and of course it went to the Republican Party, and then he figured out $200,000 would be used against him at the next election if
that's what I'm talking about,
the line. And that's true in all politics. I've always been known as a rebel anyway.
Right.
I mean, my whole background is, my entire life has been that way. I've been a little different, and I'm okay with being called different. But I am extremely independent, and I'm probably going to be a little bit rebel on that one, too. I understand supporting the party. Don't get me wrong. We have to stand together and stand as one, but I think the way that process works, I know I probably will never change it. But being a part of it might be the option.
And I just wanted to point that out, because it's something that I think people don't think about. They think about they say, well, there's a $2,800 cap. I said, that's for individual candidates. But the party can be given all this money. And then when you see situations where down the road, here or any other state, or I was even looking at the Democrats that wanted to buck the Democrat Party up there, Democrat Party got way more money coming into it. And it can tell you right now that, hey, if you don't play ball...
And that's what super PACs are for. I mean, the super PACs are just to get around the election laws, and they're legal. Not to say the super PACs are wrong, but you'll see super PACs run negative stuff on a campaign or positive stuff on a campaign. Now, the candidate themselves can have no
association with that.
Not necessarily association, but have any input. Right. And into where that money's going to be targeted to. But you get in federal elections, there's just so much money flying around. It's just truly scary.
Let's go back to the phones, and it's Freddie Wheeler checking in. Hey, Freddie.
Good afternoon, and it's good to talk to both of you gentlemen again.
Hey, Freddie.
I just want to say, Jerry, even though we had negative results on the annexation effort, I do appreciate what you did in raising the issue in the community out here. And annexation is not dead in West Mobile, not by any chance.
Well, y'all better get busy, because we signed over, I think, 7 more roads to Sims yesterday. Sims is certainly growing. Anything wrong with that, but you know, if West Mobile is going to stay West Mobile, you need to figure out what you're going to do. The people there.
Well, I think we're still rolling with the annexation effort. We're still going down that path.
And my biggest fear was the fire. I didn't want to leave office knowing that there was a hole in that fire protection. And of course,
I think there's still an effort. There's another group out there, a fire district group, that's supposedly leading that effort. I haven't had time to get involved with that, because I'm still involved with annexation, because it's still a positive thing for the city of Mobile, and it's still a positive thing for the people in this area. But, I mean, it's something that every individual is going to have to face. And I think the Amtrak vote yesterday, it's interesting that Fred Richardson, who voted against allowing us to vote for annexation, is trying to find money now to take and fund Amtrak in Mobile. So it's yet another reason why the annexation effort was so important to the city, because $1.2 million is now going to be lost, at least for a year, because of that vote.
You know, Freddie, y'all were, I mean, let me just interject for a second. Let's just talk about truth here. Y'all were the victims of y'all were a proxy for another battle going on.
Exactly.
I mean, y'all are a proxy for mayoral politics in the city of Mobile. I just say what, you know, folks don't want to hear said, but that's what truth is. I mean, the actual issue that y'all had was bound up in something that had nothing to do with y'all, and y'all got to be the victims of it.
Yeah, unfortunately. I had one question for Jerry real quick, and I didn't know if he realized, but if you go out Jeff Hamilton, there's no markings for March Road, which goes off to the left of that. So if you get the chance or the opportunity, I don't know which road and bridge camp does that, or I'd have called them personally, but there's no markings along Jeff Hamilton marking March Road going out there through Theodore and Grand Bay in that area. So.
I'll be out there late this afternoon. So I'll take a look at it myself.
Thank you both for what you've done for the community, for both sides of the bay. And I do appreciate the talk. And I really like Robert Kennedy, his that new segment that y'all have now.
Well, thank you.
That's really been great.
Thank you, Freddie. I appreciate that. All it's right. good to hear
Merry
some.
Christmas.
Hey, Merry Christmas to you. Yeah, for those who don't know, some people get mad about that, but I'm one that believes in when you can have debate and real debate on ideas, and not what you see in Washington is disingenuous. But you know, Robert Kennedy Jr. and I see things, some things the same, some things differently, and we have respect for each other and debate it from the right and left. I think it's a good thing. One sword sharpens another, like it says in the Bible. So
totally agree.
All right, can you hang out for a second?
Sure.
All right, we'll hold you over. We'll come right back after the news. It's 12:58 Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5. Remember, voting right now in our 2019 Alabamian of the Year, front page of FMTalk1065.com.